Is it scary? Yeah, you know, it's really scary because it does go wrong. I ran into posts, you know, that hurts, but you just make sure you remember where it is next time and move along.
What's scary was running blind, literally running blind.
The age of 11 and 12, you know, I was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa.
Despite his blindness, Simon Wheatcroft ran long distances for years. But then he decided to run the New York Marathon, solo, without a human guide. Doing that involves the most creative use of data you've ever not seen. Welcome to Fixed That For You, an original podcast from Segment about solving challenging problems with data and algorithms. I'm Cara Santa Maria, and in this episode, we go running through Manhattan looking for the future of personal navigation with haptic technology.
We create a virtual corridor that allows you to practically be staying on track. So as soon as you deviate off the path, the vibration begins to increase and it pushes you back towards the correct direction.
It's a journey of discovery for an industrial designer from Brooklyn and a blind runner from England. Their goal might be running a marathon, but if it works, this could mean more freedom and accessibility for the over 280 million visually impaired people worldwide.
The way that I want this product to exist is not only for the blind and visually impaired. It's like a new innovative way for navigation for tourism and for bikers, for snowboarders. Imagine you can just put your phone away and just kind of have a very free journey.
Simon Wheatcroft started to lose his vision in the sixth grade.
Retinitis pigmentosa is genetic, so you may be born with good vision, but the older you get, the more your retinas deteriorate and the more your vision sort of disappears.
By the time he went to university, he was blind.
Often with a label becomes perceived capabilities. You know, I can no longer read, I can no longer see faces. And perhaps you believe yourself that you're only capable of certain things. So it was at that point in time that I thought, well, maybe now's the time to redefine what it means to be blind, what it means in terms of what you can do.
Simon chose something big as his first challenge, climb a mountain in Yosemite National Park and propose to his girlfriend at the summit. Even though they didn't quite make it, she married him anyway. But the failed climb stayed with Simon.
I thought, you know, I'm never going to quit again just because I can't see. Let's go out and see if we can push against the boundaries of what's possible. And that's when I decided to see if I could learn to run alone.
Simon started running outdoors by himself.
Initially, it started on an empty football pitch. I was using an app on my phone, RunKeeper, and it gave distance markers to the audio.
He would go 100 yards in one direction, then turn around and go the other way. That led to running on a closed road.
From that point on, I just learned to run the open road and I memorized what it felt like to run this 3 miles paired with the audio distance markers.
Okay, try it yourself. Walk down the sidewalk with your eyes closed. How far can you go before you get nervous? It's a bit easier for a blind person used to navigating in the dark, but it's still really difficult.
You know, I was running the edges of curbs along roads with 60 miles an hour speed limits. If I went wrong, you know, I was going into the cars. And the hardest moments was my wife would drop me off with my eldest son in the back and she'd say goodbye. And, you know, realistically, we never knew if I was coming back.
Simon could run solo if he stuck to his local 3 mile stretch of road. But when he started doing marathons, he used a guide, a sighted runner, to make sure he stayed on course and didn't run into anybody or anything. After a while, though, it got boring.
I've come to realize at this point in my life, it never seems enough. I would perhaps prefer to push that boundary to breaking point. I sort of fell into this cycle where, well, now I can train solo, now I need to compete solo.
And just to up the stakes for his first race without a human guide, Simon chose an ultra marathon, a 100-mile race through the Sahara Desert. He partnered with a tech sponsor to create a navigation tool with audio cues. If he went in the wrong direction, a series of beeps would alert him. But it didn't always work so well.
It turns out there's a number of obstacles in the desert. The first being a flagpole, which I ran into. And the next obstacle was a field of rocks.
He twisted his leg badly on the rocks and had to drop out at 83 miles. He was so close. But during his long recovery, he discovered another way to reach his goal of running solo. At the same time Simon was running around his neighborhood, Kevin Yu, an industrial designer, was in New York, working on navigation tools for people with visual impairment. But instead of audio beeps, which can get really annoying, he was using haptics, communication feedback via touch, often through vibration.
It's been used for notification purposes because it's a very alert-oriented system, right? It's like, oh, you feel vibration, I'm on. Like, what is it? So that's why all the phones and everything already have haptics embedded.
He wanted to combine haptic communication with existing tools for people who have low or no vision, like the traditional white cane.
Because you are angled, pointed downward, and everything beyond 45 degrees above to your face, if there's a branch or AC or whatever you're in the city, you just get hit in the face.
Kevin's solution was to add an ultrasonic sensor to the cane that pointed upward. If it detected any obstacles, you felt a buzz in your hand. Soon after, he also started work on a haptic navigation system. The idea was to take directional information from the GPS in your phone and feed it to you through a vibrating wristband. He and a couple other guys formed a company called WearWorks, and they called their invention the Wayband. That's when Kevin got an email from a blind runner in England.
Simon reached out and said, hey, can you make a device that can give me a minimal channel of conversation with the technology that can guide me? And at this point, I was like, wow, no, not yet, but we totally can.
All Kevin had at this point was the wristband.
It was not connected to any GPS or any navigation information at all.
The Wayband didn't have any data yet, so Simon suggested the perfect testing ground, the New York Marathon, just 4 months away.
That was the goal. Like, literally design it for a runner, design it for the marathon, and make it work.
A navigation system needs three types of data: destination, orientation, and location. Location's where you are. Orientation's what direction you're facing. And destination, that's where you want to go. For Kevin and Simon, destination was easy. That's the route of the race. They had software developers create a phone app that connected to Simon's wristband using imported GPS data. Then they drew a series of dots marking the marathon route and made each of them a sequential destination.
It's like playing Pac-Man and you're collecting these dots.
Those dots drew a path through all five boroughs.
Central Park is an issue because that's sweeping turns. Whereas if you then compare that to running the actual blocks of New York, which are all hard angles, that's easier.
Sweeping turns required a lot of dots. Right angles only needed one on each corner. Okay, so that's destination. Then Kevin looked at the orientation data, which was collected using the phone's internal compass. The problem was the marathon route crossed two massive bridges, bridges that are made out of metal.
There's a lot of magnet problems, like the omnidirectionality orientation chip that's on the phone. It gets distracted by big metals and oceans, right? So if you go on a bridge with your phone, orientation spins. Is completely off.
Luckily, bridges are usually straight, so even if the gyro was spinning, Simon would know to keep going in the same direction. Now, collecting location data with the phone's internal GPS unit should have been simple, but New York, as you may have noticed, has more than its fair share of skyscrapers, and those tall buildings block signals from satellites, forcing your phone to guess.
Pinpointing these areas with high density buildings and difficult information collection of data was step one.
Once Kevin found the trouble spots, he plotted corrections.
Whenever I felt disturbance in the data, I would change the point myself and then to see if I ran that pathway again, would it equalize?
He was able to do this thanks to a specialized platform the developers created.
We're canceling out wrong data information that already exists within all of our phones because of, you know, magnetometers and big buildings, and we cancel that out constantly by adding in the data points that we predicted would be the mistake.
Essentially, at key spots, they had to lie to their own app.
This only worked because we had the route of the marathon, and that was consistent.
But then Kevin discovered a bigger issue with the orientation data. Think about how you hold your phone. It's in front of you. You're facing the screen. So the compass in your phone is built for that. But the plan was for Simon to run with his phone strapped to his upper arm, making it face sideways.
But if you tilt it sideways, now the orientation is wrong. That's the way that you have to put it on your arm. So we have to make that small, slight alteration so that even if it's 45 degrees angled on the side of your arm, it'll still be registered as pointing forward.
That meant hacking into the back end of Simon's phone.
It's actually not an easy problem, but we just put a layer of platform to fool the phone. The angle never happened.
It's quite the system.
So we have the cell phone on one arm and we have the product on the other arm.
That's the thing that vibrates.
Imagine a little sleeve that slips up to your bicep. It's quite firm on your bicep in sort of like an elasticated way.
Every time Simon reaches a dot on the map, the system navigates to the next one.
The new orientation to the next dot is now presented. You will now feel that. You'll pretty much feel that the vibration has begun.
And then you just feel the vibrations on your bicep.
And then we'll gently push you towards the non-vibrational route, which is now the right pathway. So continuously by doing this, you're following down the path of the marathon.
And then we ended up dialing that up a fair amount as well, because what happens is, as you're running, you're actually generating a lot of vibration through the body. So then you need the haptics to be able to be a big enough indicator over that natural body vibration.
Programming the haptic vibrations was almost like writing a new language. Different patterns and intensities meant different things.
So let's imagine we've exited the corridor, we're going slightly wrong, and we're beginning to get vibration, but we also happen to be coming up to a corner. So then you need to be able to have a totally different pattern to denote that you need to turn versus you've exited the corridor.
All these adjustments were done in the middle of Central Park. Every day, Simon would meet with Kevin. Sometimes a software expert or one of the hardware guys would join them. They would run a few miles, change some settings, then run the same route again. That was fine for Simon. He was a well-conditioned runner. Kevin was not.
I was like stressed out. I was just like one of those guys working till like 4 a.m, smoking outside, coming back in, like working again. So I was very unhealthy during a long course of this, the evolution of the product.
But it was becoming clear that someone had to run the race with Simon to troubleshoot technical problems.
I was running with the device a lot to test it out. Over time, I realized I was training. I was training practically for the run.
And so the decision was made. Kevin signed up for his first marathon.
I think it definitely made me respect him more. You know, the fact that he was not only creating this technology, but he was willing to step up.
But before they could do that, Simon and Kevin had to deal with yet another problem. And any of you who have ever run a marathon or even seen one on TV have probably already figured out what that is, right? He wouldn't be running the marathon alone. 50,000 other people would be running right next to him.
For the run of the marathon with Simon, I had to make a secondary product.
For the secondary product, Kevin went back to his earlier invention, the traditional white cane with an added sensor. This time, he strapped it onto Simon.
So it's an ultrasonic sensor embedded onto the chest, and it detects people far away, so 10 feet distance.
It vibrated when an object or another runner entered that zone.
Day before the marathon, I tested on Simon, and we started running. My assumption was if you get objects getting closer, you want the vibration to be stronger so they can avoid it. That was my assumption. But I was wrong.
It's a case of the designer not understanding the end user. Kevin doesn't have a lifetime's experience bumping into things like Simon does.
He said, I can't detect the people early enough because I'm traveling too fast. And by the time I detect it, I'm already too late. So I had to reverse the code so that the vibration would be the strongest as soon as an object enters in from 10 feet and closer.
Simon also wanted a second piece of information.
A runner could enter the area where it would vibrate and then exit, but it would still vibrate. So I'd get no indication that they'd left and exited. So I was like, hang on a minute, we need to switch this around that as they leave and enter, it changes the vibration. So I understand if people are moving, past me. So running, to the left of me or running to the right of me. Sort of visual field almost.
All of this was happening less than 24 hours before the start of the race. It's the morning of the race, and Simon and Kevin are running on a combination of adrenaline and self-doubt.
Whenever you're testing a piece of technology that is in the prototype stage, there's always a big question mark of, is this even possible?
By this point in his life, Simon's done things most of us would never even imagine. But running unaided in the largest marathon in the world, this was scary, even for him. The race starts by crossing the Verrazano Bridge from Staten Island into Brooklyn.
You don't really get much chance to come and test it very much on that bridge. Yeah. So straight away, there's issues.
Remember, bridges are made with lots of metal, bad for GPS.
I knew that the disturbances of the metals and everything would be too much. I just said, Simon, this is a bridge. It's going to go forward. I'm going to put the vise on forward, and that's it. Very simple.
They aren't really using the navigation aspect of the device, but it does keep Simon running straight so he doesn't fall off the bridge into the harbor.
Now, the system that tells me, is there something in front of me, works fantastic, incredible. Running across that bridge felt like the first time I had an opportunity to compete solo in a complex race, and it was incredible. I just was weaving about, running along that bridge, avoiding people, dropping in behind people, playing around with how close I was getting to the person in front.
As soon as we crossed the first bridge, I turned the activation of the route, and then from there on, it began.
As we come off the bridge, our system suggests that I'm in the wrong spot, but I know I'm in the right spot because I've run this race before.
The Verrazano Bridge has two levels. Simon's on the lower deck, but the course they've programmed is for the top deck. The exit ramps are completely different.
That was a bit of an issue, but again, because I'm relatively comfortable with running by feel, I knew that you dropped off the bridge to the left. If you run the white line, you know you're going in the right direction.
After half a mile or so, the two routes converged, and the GPS confirmed he was in the virtual corridor. Simon was cruising through Brooklyn, enjoying his run. But 10 feet behind him, Kevin was finding new things to worry about.
My biggest fear during the run was disturbances caused by other people.
There were 2.5 million people cheering on 50,000 runners, and every one of those fans was snapping photos and posting them on social media.
You have an incredible amount of data transferring from everywhere. So even though I ran the route multiple times with Simon and tested out the major points of difficulties, with the addition of this problem of just many people being there and using a lot of data, just made it worse.
It got really bad on looping turns where the app needed to locate more of those mapping dots. The only way to correct this on the fly was to reboot Simon's phone.
We end up in this little cycle of where it's working, it's not working, it's working, it's not working, it's working, it's not working. That's just getting really difficult.
But there were periods where everything clicked.
Simon was literally avoiding people using the ultrasonic sensor and using the Wayband Sport to navigate. Like, really, I was like, wow, this is working. You know, I'm there, I'm running, like I'm seeing it happen. It was amazing.
You know, you do get these sort of waves of realization of what you're doing. You know, you're doing this alone, and you're doing this alone thanks to technology.
But then after 16 miles, the runners crossed their second bridge and entered Manhattan. At this point, the crowds got even bigger and the data usage skyrocketed.
Immediate overload of information that the data just could not reach us. And this allowed for a lot of glitches, a lot of errors.
This was also when, on what was already a gray and drizzly day, it started pouring.
The rain sort of deteriorated the ultrasonics to the point where, you know, is the rain making this vibrate or is there someone in front of me?
I should have thought about that more in advance. It was water resistant. It was sweat resistant, but it definitely was not waterproof. And the device actually failed about 17 miles in.
As I removed the technology, it's almost like I handed over my energy and will to move. It just broke me.
But then Kevin, the first-time marathoner, stepped up.
I was the plan C to literally be like, Simon, something has gone down. Now we have to finish the rest of the race purely by voice. And this is where I was like, okay, let's run.
It was hard to get to the end. It was really, really hard.
Really hard, but they did it. In a time of 5.5 hours, Simon Wheatcroft and Kevin Yu completed the 2017 New York City Marathon.
If we'd chosen to do a half marathon, we'd have done it. But perhaps it was my nature of always trying to push things as far as possible that we chose a bigger distance.
But after the disappointment of not running solo the whole way, Simon came to appreciate the accomplishment.
We got to glimpse what was possible. We got the opportunity to demonstrate that this technology really could enable me to do something alone.
And this is what Kevin and his colleagues at WearWorks are hoping to build on thanks to better data. IEEE satellites and Qualcomm GPS chips in most cell phones will soon be updated.
going towards the future, IEEE update is going to do 1 point accurate assumption. So this is going to make the accuracy of GPS to 3 centimeters.
And remember, all of that data was used to get just one guy across the finish line. Kevin's now adding voice options to the vibrations and also looking for ways to create indoor routes, which would be amazing for, say, tourists, blind and sighted, in the New York City subway.
We want to connect subway, public transportation, all into one fluid navigation routine.
And then imagine what could happen when tens of thousands of people start using it and agree to anonymously feed their hyper-specific route data back to the app.
In the end, the data collecting and the data usage will be for identifying what route is the best for you based on less amount of stress levels. No construction, no potholes, no heavy traffics and, you know, crowds of people. These are just small ways I think we can help with data.
But not just in small ways for some people.
For blind and vision impaired, it will be a life-changing.
Life-changing solutions achieved with data and algorithms on another episode of Fix That For You, an original podcast by Segment. If you want to find out more about Simon's story or Where Works, check out the show notes. And you can find us at segment.com/podcast. Plus, subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you do that sort of thing. I'm Cara Santa Maria. Thanks for listening.